This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, this is Labor Radio Show, and I am your host, Lane Ponce, and here with me, my co-host is...
This is Michael Morrow.
And this evening we have two Michaels, so you'll have to differentiate your voices very clearly. We have a guest with us from the Oregon State Legislature, Mr. Michael Dembro, and he is with District 45, which is Northeast Portland.
That's right.
So we'll be talking about issues and what you were doing this year. For right now, I have some announcements to one announcement, a big announcement, because we have some very entertaining musicians coming to town, the Almanac Trail Concert Tour. That will be Thursday, August 1st at 7:30 p.m. at SEIU Local 49 Union Ballroom at 3536 Southeast 26th Avenue in Portland. These guys have been touring up and down the coast. They're great musicians, and they have a very interesting labor topic that they sing and troubadour through. They're suggesting a $5 to $10 deposit at the door, but, you know, it's whatever you can afford. So if you want to look into that closer, they're on the website www.almanactrail.com, which is the Almanac Trail. So if you can show up for that, everyone would appreciate it. Okay, let's start in discussing what went on in the session this year.
And I would, before we start that, we thought since the legislative session gaveled 2 weeks ago, so we've been running full speed here into the next biennium for a couple of weeks, Representative Dembro actually is a member of my union, which is AFT 2277 at Portland Community College. Michael was president of that union for about 14 years and has been in the legislature for three sessions and has worked his way up to being chair of the higher ed committee in the House. So has a lot of inside insights and ought to be able to provide us with some useful information about what happened, what didn't happen, and what may happen next year. So, Michael, welcome. You want to start with just a summary?
Sure. Let me start off with what went well this session. And I have to say, first of all, that a lot did go well this session, especially compared to the last one. You know, you may recall that last session, the House of Representatives was tied 30-30. It really set us up for a lot of gridlock, and it caused us to stall on a lot of key issues in our progressive agenda that we were able to take up again this session. And, you know, I'm happy to say we were able to make progress on. First of all, we were able to put $1 billion more dollars into K-12 education. As you know, we've been cutting and cutting and cutting. What we've seen in the districts has been shorter school years, fewer teachers, larger class sizes. We're able to start turning that around this session. That felt really good. We were also able to put nearly another $1 billion into bonding for colleges and universities for their infrastructure, for their buildings. And that is going to create a lot of good union jobs around the state. I'm very proud to see that happen. Issues that were very close to me, first the issue of tuition equity, which now children who graduated from Oregon high schools, irrespective of their documentation status, will be able to go to our universities and pay the in-state rate. And along with that, some other, you know, really key victories for our immigrant brothers and sisters, a new system of driver's cards that will be open to people who are here without documentation. We passed legislation that will require medical providers to have training and cultural competency. All three of those issues that we attempted to do last session, and they just died on the rocks of the 3030 House.
And I just would like to extend to folks who are listening, I think this is maybe the third time we've tried the tuition equity.
Tuition equity, actually, it's been 10 years.
Longer than that, 10 years. And just to emphasize, these are kids who have come into the country, most of them as very young children. Many of them have never left the country.
They have no idea of
what their home country, what their parents' home country, you know, is like, or relatives there. And many of them, most of them, in fact, are very good students, excellent students. So this, most of us see this as quite a win in many ways, and is a real plus for the state of Oregon and for our hardworking students. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. We're able to put another $10 million into career technical education. As many of you know, the state has been disinvesting in career technical ed in its high schools. We want to turn that ship around, and this was a really big gain. Able to put $1 million into farm to school, helping local farmers, particularly small farmers, who are able to get their produce into their local schools, which will make for healthier, you know, more nutritious meals for students, as well as better partnerships between between agriculture and the schools. We are going to be doing better oversight of for-profit colleges and universities. Many of you may not know that more and more students are being lured into for-profit colleges and universities and are taking on horrendous debt levels. The issue of student debt is a big one everywhere, but it's particularly a problem in these for-profit schools where students are charged an arm and a leg, and the default rates are huge. One in four students in a for-profit college will default on their student loans. It is a big problem, and we're starting to get on top of it. We've actually revamped the governance of all of higher education, bringing universities and community colleges closer together and making it so that allowing universities to have their own institutional boards, and on those boards there will be student, faculty, and classified staff. Oregon, I believe, is the first state in the nation that will require there to be a classified staff on the local governing boards of universities.
What kind of decisions would that board be involved in throughout the year?
Well, just all the policy decisions regarding, you know, what the university does, the courses that are offered, the services that are given, tuition rates, you know, some, you know, really key issues. Related to the issue of student debt, we are instituting a program, or at least we're instituting the creation of a pilot program for something called Pay It Forward, which is a new way of funding tuition, allowing students to, rather than pay their tuition up front, they would essentially be allowed to go free of charge from tuition. And then after they graduate, they would be on an income-based repayment plan where they would pay back perhaps 3%, 4% of their monthly income, irrespective of their income. And what that will allow students to do is to go into occupations that our society desperately needs, social workers, teachers, childcare providers, and still be able to manage their student debt. I'm very excited about where that's potentially going to go. It's been Oregon's going down this road has attracted a great deal of national interest. New York Times, a number of different media, NPR has been talking about it. It's very exciting.
And this is on the drawing board at this point. What would need to happen for this actually to roll out?
Well, one of the things that it will need is, and this is another thing that we did this session, the treasurer pushed us, Treasurer Ted Wheeler pushed us to enact legislation that will refer to the voters a constitutional change that will change the way that we do bonding. Right now, the state can only bond for buildings, you know, physical infrastructure. What this will allow us to do is to bond for human infrastructure. In other words, we could bond and then use the proceeds from that bond to pay for student scholarships for a program like Pay It Forward. And then as the students are repaying their obligation to the state, that would be the debt service that would repay those bonds. So this is going to come before the voters in November of 2014. I anticipate a lot of discussion about higher education and, you know, the intolerable rising costs of higher education, the burden, crushing burden of student debt, and how we as a state need to think about investing in people, not just investing in buildings. I look forward to that debate.
Great. Thank you.
You'll probably be back here talking about that.
I'm sure I will.
We appreciate your visits.
Yeah. So I've kind of focused on education issues there. There are a couple of labor-specific issues that we were able to get passed that I'm very proud of. One of them is House Bill 3342, which we call the Public Sector Organizing Neutrality Bill. What that does is it forbids public employers from using public dollars to defeat union organizing drives. This is a big problem. Where, you know, just recently the University of Oregon, the faculty there organized last year. The university put about $50,000 into defeating that organizing drive, which they failed to do. The faculty decided to organize. And, you know, it just seems wrong for us to use state dollars to keep people from exercising their constitutionally, you know, mandated right to form a union. So this will prevent the employer from doing that. It also will allow a card check for if a union wants to expand its unit to bring in other workers. Once a union is formed, it won't have to go through an election. It will be able to use the vehicle of a majority of the members signing up and saying, I want to have a union. I want to be part of this union. And they'll be able to do that. That was a huge victory.
And for listeners out there who are interested in this, some of you may know that organizing higher education has been an uphill fight for many years. The profs at the University of Oregon decided that they really needed a full-fledged union. They've mm-hmm. been AAUW members.
AUP.
AUP members. And now they have a joint membership with AFT, and they are currently bargaining their contract. For those who are interested, you can go online to the newspaper down there, the Register Guard. They had a very nice article yesterday in Sunday's Register Guard. It's registerguard.com about the process, the bargaining process that the U of O is going through now. And our state executive director is one of the lead negotiators for the faculty side of that. So,
as faculty educators, the two of you, what do you think were the really driving issues for the faculty to finally decide to get organized? Any ideas on that? You might have some ideas, personally speaking.
Well, the this is Michael.
This the is Michael.
Michael,
the
Michael
host.
Morrow. The difficulty with organizing people who consider themselves professionals, especially educators who consider themselves professionals, is that they believe that they are able to negotiate on their own what they are worth, and that has been the process at private and public four-year schools forever. What they have discovered over the last few years with the funding problems is that it's becoming more and more difficult to do that. I know I was a graduate student at the U of O back in the 80s, and we would hire just dynamite, exciting young assistant professors who would come in, teach for 3 years, and then would leave. they would go back to the University of Maryland, where they got 50% more than they were getting at the University of Oregon. So over the years, the difficulty for especially arts and letters, social sciences, those folks, you know, the pay has been reasonable in the hard sciences and the business schools, but for a lot of folks, it's just been very difficult. The other piece, and Michael Denbro can probably weigh in on this, is that the graduate students down there have had a union for 30 years, part of AFT, American Federation of Teachers. So there's a milieu down there in Eugene, and hopefully soon in Corvallis, that is more focused on what unions are able to accomplish with respect to a number of issues. Salary is only one of those issues. What you're able to do in your own classroom, of course, is another issue, and the protections around that. So that's just kind of my quick and dirty. Mm-hmm. Michael?
No, I think you've handled it well, Michael. The other issue I would mention that has a lot of people concerned is the ongoing conversion of full-time positions into part-time positions.
That's what I thought we would hit on, sure.
Yeah, and they're hoping that this will help them to hold the line on that. And especially as the University of Oregon will now have its own board of directors, there's a concern and I think a legitimate fear that board will, if there's not a strong union to counter it, that board could become a very corporate board. You know, just think of, the big donors to the University of Oregon. They find themselves in a position where they could exert a lot of authority. The faculty are going to want to be able to push back on that. Right. They need to.
Well, you are listening to KBOO 90.7, and we're happy to have you with us this evening. We also would entertain any callers that would like to call in on our call-in line, 503-231-8187, if you'd like to call in with questions. All right, let's continue the conversation. What else do you have to share with us, Mr. Denbro?
Well, a couple of the other bills that passed that I'm proud of. One, Oregon passed its version of the Move to Amend movement, which is in response to the Citizens United Supreme Court case, which said that, essentially the corporations are people and therefore they have all the rights that people do, including the free speech rights that allow them to donate unlimited amounts of campaign contributions. And so we joined a number of other states in passing a resolution calling on Congress to pass a constitutional amendment that will allow this country finally to do real campaign finance reform, which many of us really believe in, and also to make it clear that corporations are not people. They are legal entities. They do important things, but they don't have the same rights that individuals do. An issue that's really important to me and to many of us is getting to universal health care. And on the positive side, we were able to come up with the funding to bring another couple hundred thousand people onto the Oregon Health Plan. Very proud of that. I believe that the future of healthcare in this country, though, is something more like a Medicare for all model. What's
single payer.
Often called single payer, right? And we were able to pass legislation this time setting up a study of Oregon's healthcare payment different scenarios that will, I believe, move us in the direction of single payer. We're following the lead of Vermont, which did this a few years ago. They did a study that showed that something like single payer would be the best thing for Vermont. I believe that this study will show that the same for Oregon and will help us to pinpoint what is the best way of funding such a single payer system here for Oregon.
Right. So you're not trying to reinvent the wheel every time new state comes on board.
Yeah. If we want to have single payer in this state, it's going to require a vote of the people. And we need to be able to show the people that this is the best plan. This is the best system for Oregon. It's the most responsible, and it's where we need to go.
I have seen some public service announcements on television about something about calling in to check on an Oregon health plan. Is that what you're referring to?
Nope.
What is that?
Yeah, what you're thinking of is the new exchange. It's what's called Cover Oregon.
Yes.
Where healthcare is going to be sold on this public exchange. The problem with it is it's still, you know, it's nearly all private insurance that's being sold on the exchange. And there, you know, there are problems with that. It's creating a lot of overhead that, you know, I believe is unnecessary and that doesn't necessarily have the public interest in mind.
And this is part of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And the major piece of that that's a plus is many more people will now have health coverage. The part of that that many of us think is problematic is that it's all done through the private sector and the for-profits, mostly the for-profit sector. So finding ways at a state level, and this is something people might want to just keep their eyes open for, finding ways to do this at a state level. If enough states are able to pull this together, then there will be at some point a critical mass, and Congress will have to look at the fact that...
That's right. And let me say, if you're interested, any of you out there are interested in pursuing what's going on with single payer here in this state, go to hcao.org. HCAO, that's Healthcare for All Oregon.org. And we have legislation that is single payer legislation that we hope to pass in a couple of years. So let me see. Another thing we were able to do is last session, the senior property tax deduction program had to be scaled way back. We were able to ramp it back up this time. We made a change in the senior medical deduction, which I think is a common sense one. Right now, if you're over 62, you can piggyback on the federal medical deduction, not just for yourself, but for anybody in your household who may not be 62. That actually struck us as not making a whole lot of sense because there are a number of households out there where people who are 62 are claiming medical deductions for partners who may be, you know, in their 40s or 50s, and that money really is needed to fund senior programs, and so we found a way to hold on to that. So, well, have I missed anything?
That's the good.
It just took you 20 minutes to review a whole year's worth of work.
There has been this session. It was in many ways far superior, as you mentioned, to the session that we had 2 years ago, where the House was split 30-30. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that most of our listeners probably are already aware of is we have this double majority situation in our state legislature where anything that passes that has to do with funds or financing needs a supermajority. It needs 60% to pass. And that is a tough bar to get over. And my guess is that we had several possibly very useful pieces of legislation that may not have seen the light of day because we could not get to that supermajority. So what, you know, what were your disappointments this time around?
Well, we did have a revenue package that we had hoped would pass that would have asked a little bit more of our most successful corporations, that is, those that had income earnings more than $10 million. We were asking a little bit more of our wealthier households, those with income above $250,000, sort of following up on work that was done with Measures 66 and 67, which, as you know, were heavily supported by Oregonians. And we were looking for a modest increase in the cigarette tax to be able to put money into human services programs. None of that we were able to do because we came up against this obstacle of needing a supermajority. We would have needed two Republican votes in each chamber, and at the end of the day, those were not there. So that was very frustrating. I mean, as I said, we were able to put $1 billion more into K-12. By no means does that get us to where we need to be. There are a number of districts in this area that will still be having short school years, much shorter than they need to be, and classes that are much larger than they need to be. We could have taken a real step towards solving that problem, putting more money into higher ed. You know, higher ed, it's embarrassing for me to say that Oregon is number 47 of the 50 states in terms of the share of university college costs that come from the state. It's the great majority of it is coming through tuition. If we could just move ourselves up to average, you know, to the middle of the pack, it would make an enormous difference. But, you know, that takes an investment mentality. And it means that, you know, people who are doing well need to be prepared to step up and invest a little more through their taxes.
So looking ahead to next year and potentially even a special session this year that would involve that and also would include additional PERS reform. Would you like to say something about those possibilities?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, the media, particularly the Oregonian, has, as many of you out there know, been on a tear for us to do things with PERS that, you know, I believe are illegal, actually, that, you know, could not stand up in court, to go much further than the reforms that were made 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago, we did very significant reforms in the state that really hit public employees quite hard. You know, most of them saw their benefits reduced over time by 25% or more. But, you know, there is no doubt that with the downturn in the economy caused by, you know, the Wall Street recession, we are the value, the solvency of the PERS fund was hurt. The PERS fund, Oregon PERS is still much more viable than almost any other system in the country, but it does have a deficit. And we do need to make sure that we, you know, we keep it viable. But at the same time, we don't want to do it on the backs only of public employees. And that's why we were looking for some kind of shared responsibility model. We make some modest changes to the PERS system. And at the same time, we ask more of our more affluent corporations and individuals. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get there. The governor is trying to get us to that point either before February or in February in the next session. We'll see if we get there. If it's a PERS proposal that is just, you know, asks really hard things, I mean impossibly hard things on public employees, unfair things, then I can't support it. But if it's reasonable and it's forward-thinking, then perhaps it has a future.
Well, thank you for the valuable information, Michael. And thanks for joining us on the show. You did mention, we're close to signing off, you did mention right at the end the governor. Have you got any inside information on whether or not he's going to run again?
I don't have any inside information. I would guess that he is.
Yeah. Okay, that's as inside as we get, right?
It is.
Okay, well, stay tuned. And next Monday night, the Labor Radio Show will be on. It's on every Monday from 6 to 6:30, and we hope you all join us each week. Thank you very much.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information can be found online at ubc156.org. Coming up next is Prison Pipeline at 6:30, and at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Stay tuned for more.
Afghanistan. Obama talks withdrawal while over 100,000 U.S. and NATO troops remain alongside an equal number of contractors. While the most intense fighting since 2001 rages out of control. Fleeing Afghans make up the largest refugee asylum-seeking population in the world today. Tune in to Political Perspectives Wednesday morning, July 31st at 9 a.m. Professor Zahair Wahab, returning from 5 months in Kabul training teachers, will join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, to report on the state of the country and the war. Then we'll open up the phone lines for your call. Tune in and call in this Wednesday, July 31st at 9 a.m. for Report from Afghanistan.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. In early July, I spoke to Veterans for Peace as they vigiled outside Portland City Hall. They are vigiling daily to call attention to the prisoners detained at the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. In February, the prisoners at Guantanamo began a hunger strike to protest their indefinite imprisonment. Currently, less than 100 continue the hunger strike, with some now being force-fed. And I'd like to let you know about an event that's happening this Thursday, sponsored by the Veterans for Peace, Portland Chapter 72, and the First Unitarian Church Economic Justice Action Group and others. It's Thursday, August 1st at 7 p.m. The event is The Grotesque Injustice of Guantanamo, an Insider's Account. And the speakers include Stephen T. Wax, Laura Sandow, S. Brian Wilson, and others. So that's August 1st, 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church of Portland.
Hi, Mike. We're at the Veterans for Peace Vigil. And tell me why you're here.
Well, we're a group of veterans and also